This is Our Voices. I'm Mario Trimble.
In order to be a place where everyone in our community feels valued and connected, we first have to ensure that everyone believes they belong. These are Our Voices, a joint podcast production from the Colorado and Denver Bar Association's Equity, Diversity, and Inclusivity Joint Steering Committee. Our Voices shines a light on the unique stories, experiences, and backgrounds of our member leaders so that we can help each other walk together. Passionate about family and service to the community, Jefferson County Senior Deputy District Attorney Adam Hepp speaks candidly about his life path, his experience in the U.S. Air Force, and making a difference in the law. Adam sat down with our own Linda Moss and Mallory Revel to discuss alternative court systems designed to promote rehabilitation over incarceration, his love of Colorado, and professionalism in the Colorado legal community.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us this afternoon for this week's episode of Our Voices. I'm Mallory Revel, a criminal defense attorney with Foster Graham, Milstein, and Kalischer, and I'm here with my co-host.
I'm Linda Moss. I'm a family law attorney with Sutteroche, Smith, and Schellenberger. Today, we have the great pleasure of speaking with Mr. Adam Hepp.
Welcome, Adam.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's very good to be here.
So for those of you who don't know our podcast, generally we like to talk to our guests about their entire lives. So we're going to go, who were you, who are you, and who are you going to be? So Adam, tell us about who you were.
I'll start with currently. Extremely unqualified to participate in this compared to some of the other podcasts I've listened to with you guys. So here we go. But I grew up in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee, actually. And I was the oldest of three boys. My dad was a police officer. My mom was a nurse. And we had a real big extended family. It was always busy. And sometimes with the three boys, we were all 16 months apart, it was a little rough,
yeah.
But always fun and lots of sports, lots of great family time, grandparents, aunts and uncles, and good place to grow up.
Yeah. So you had a lot of family who lived around you?
We did. And it just seemed like there's always yard work to do at families' houses. And so my dad would haul us over there and we'd be put to work and we have to kind of earn our supper. It was good, but it was a good place to grow up. And, I was here through high school and I was wondering how long I was gone. And I got my 25th reunion notice. And so it's been 25 years.
Wow.
By the way, tips for all of you out there with young boys, yard work. It's a great plan.
And with your dad as a police officer and your mom as a nurse, it sounds like you came from a family with pretty strong dedication to service. Did that impact you growing up?
Definitely did. I think two aspects of it, the service aspect and getting involved in your community, knowing your community and trying to do something for it. And then I know this applies as a district attorney and other things I've done. You get to know people very well who are you're working with. They're from all over the place, all kinds of different backgrounds. And because of the nature of the work, you get to know them well. And that was always a lot of fun. And some of my heroes growing up were people my dad worked with and people my mom worked with. And they were really good influences to have outside the family.
Very cool.
Yeah. So tell us what school was like for you growing up.
It was good. The biggest impact was in high school. I went to Marquette University High School. It's a Jesuit school here in Milwaukee. It used to be heavily associated with the university until I think about 100 years ago, they split into two different ones. And that, you know, on top of my parents' careers and their influence, that was what really lit the fire of a service life and eventually profession for me. It was really a lot of lessons about how to work and how to compete because the school was very tough and they expected a lot of you. But more importantly, I had an economic teacher. And I remember thinking, okay, you really got to concentrate on this and do well in school. Mm-hmm. And he said, hey, the service aspect of what we teach at the school is more important than any of this. And as a 16-year-old, I thought he was crazy. And now as a 43-year-old, he was absolutely right. And it was great, a great experience. I still have great friends from Marquette High, and it changed my life.
Where did you go to college?
I started off at the University of Montana in Missoula, Montana, and I did 2 years there. I was in pre-law, like I think probably a lot of us were, and things were going well, but I got a big piece of influence shoved in my face that I did not anticipate. My sophomore year, one of my younger brothers went to the Air Force Academy, and I went down to visit him, and he was a freshman because it's a little rough on the freshman to get him off campus, get him dinner. And I met his sponsor parents, and the sponsor dad, it's like a local family that helps the Wayward Cadets down in Colorado Springs. And the sponsor dad was a fighter pilot, and the neighbor was a Air Force pilot. And after a weekend of hanging out with them and my brother, they said to me, hey, you could do this if you wanted to. And I never thought of aviation as a potential career before that, or the Air Force or anything like that. And they kind of clued me into that. And so at the end of that year, I packed up everything I owned in my little Buick, and I drove down to Fort Collins and entered at wow. CSU and did 2 years there and graduated and got commissioned. That was a great experience.
What was your favorite bar in Fort Collins?
Fort Collins, there are quite a few. And, you know, I've heard of these places, you know, from friends, et cetera, but I might have liked the Trailhead in Fort Collins. They had Moose Head on tap, which, as people know, is a really high brow beer. It was kind of a Midwest themed bar. Maybe that just called to me.
It felt homey.
That was a great experience. Colorado State was a complete blast. And I was very spoiled, I thought, where I went to school between Missoula and Fort Collins.
Yeah. How did you wind up in Missoula?
My uncle, my godfather, my dad's brother, moved to Montana in about 75, I think it was, before I was born, for a job, and just fell in love with it. And we do vacations out there a lot. And so growing up, you know, we pack up the family car and drive across the Dakotas and then all the way across Montana, because Missoula is on the western edge. And we are out there probably every other year. I just fell in love with it and thought, this is where I'm going to make my life. And things turned out differently, of course. I left Montana, but I still have great friends there. It's a fond place in my heart. And so that's how I ended up. Some kid from Milwaukee showing up in Missoula, knowing exactly zero people at the school.
So you wound up in Fort Collins. I mean, it seems like, I don't know, was there a culture shock? It seems like you were moving a lot in kind of a short period of time.
Fort Collins, the biggest culture shock was the weather was so much nicer in Colorado. It wasn't as cold. That was a nice thing. I was more impressed with the school, but I think the first move is the hardest. That first move, that first pangs of being homesick and not having a clue what's going on. After that first one, the second was a lot easier. And I was a little older, all of, you know, mature age of 20, but also a different focus with joining Air Force ROTC. A little bigger support structure, and it was off to the races.
Tell us about your military journey.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll spare you the details. I don't want anybody falling asleep as they're driving or walking.
Oh, no, give podcast. Us details.
But I got commissioned out of Fort Collins. I competed at CSU in the program to get a pilot slot, and I was lucky enough to do that. And so I got commissioned, and then in August of 2000, then I was first stationed in Albuquerque for 6 months and did some flight screening there. And then I went to pilot training in Texas, in lovely Del Rio, Texas, right on the border. Not so great for socializing, but really good for flying. Mm. And so I did a pilot training, and then I got turned around and I was an instructor there for 3 years. And a lot of lessons learned there about communicating to people, how to get the best out of students, and how to give somebody a technique that's going to work for them. Not so much of, you know, what works for me or what I think should work for them, but what does work for them. And there's a lot of, I'll call it soul searching while you're an instructor, because you want your students to do well. And at first I was real aggressive and thought, I want every student to be better than I am, because I'm going to teach them everything I know. And with that, hey, they can be better than I am. And I wanted that for them, but it took me a while to realize that everybody's on their own journey. Everybody has their own motivations and willingness to, whether it's sacrifice or just what and what they want to end up flying. And so I really had to take a look at myself and think, okay, I'm going to let this person be the best they can be. Not necessarily they're going to be better than me or better than some other instructor. It's let's just maximize their potential. And it really changed how I instructed. And I think I was a lot better. And I probably mellowed out a little bit too, which is good for everybody.
So how long were you ultimately in the military and flying for?
I was active duty for 12 years. So after Texas, went and flew F-16s for a while in Phoenix and then in Utah, did a little time in Iraq. And then after that, the advice I got was, hey, go teach at F-16 school. You're set up for that. You're already an instructor. But I still wanted to go overseas. I still wanted to help out. And when I was in Iraq and people needed help, the person I would talk to get final clearance to do things was usually an Air Force guy embedded with the Army. And I didn't want to go teach again. And so I volunteered to be in charge of those guys, to work with those guys. And so I was lucky enough to go through airborne school, if you can call that lucky. And then I went off to Alaska to be with a small Air Force squadron embedded with the Army Brigade. And I went to Afghanistan with them. Very interesting experience, a very different culture than the flying world, but definitely worthy of my time. And I learned a lot of things there. So I did a tour in Afghanistan, came back, and the most important part of my military career happened right after Afghanistan is because my wife was also in the Air Force. I met her in Alaska after I got back from Afghanistan.
Awesome. Oh, that's exciting.
So that was that. That was my active duty time. And then I did 6 years at the Pentagon in international affairs as a country director for security cooperation,
fancy.
a big way to say helping countries, other countries as an advisor about what they should do in terms of buying different things, how we can best cooperate with them to increase their security and how they work with us and just trying to build a lot of relationships. So I was in Jordan every about 3 weeks for about a 6 month period right before law school. And then after that, I was just part-time at the Pentagon. And my current job is in Germany for about a little over a month a year doing that kind of work, but with on the countries in the continent of Africa. It's not as specific as I was with Jordan and then Iraq later on, but now it's with AFRICOM and still fascinating. Just a really interesting job and it's been very good.
Whoa, that's so interesting. So just so I understand, how often do you go to Germany?
Well, my big thing was supposed to be twice a year on this really good deal. And I got the assignment in March of 2020.
Oh.
And I think COVID, maybe you've heard of it.
It messed something up with going to Germany.
I went over for 5 weeks last year and the first 2 weeks I had to quarantine.
Uh-huh.
And so that was really fun. But luckily, coworkers brought me groceries and things like that.
Oh, well, that's sweet. Here, you get to eat.
So, Adam, what are some ways you have managed some of the stress from those tours in Iraq and Afghanistan?
The time in Iraq and Afghanistan, besides making great friends and people that mean a lot to me, was sometimes I'll admit, and I don't talk about this much, they were pretty stressful, but there were lessons learned. You had things going on that were more important than you were and people counting on you. And to me, helping them was more important than me. And so there were some stressful things, but it was focusing on the job, focusing on what my teammates needed, what other people needed, what the Afghans needed, what the Iraqis needed, and trying to help all the people I could in those arenas. And I think it provided a lot of perspective. And I hope I'm a better DA because of that experience, that dealing with stressful times and knowing when things maybe start to feel like stress in the DA world, but maybe really aren't. And it just kind of be a leader by keeping calm on that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Talk about perspective.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's forced upon you. It's not always this big philosophical thing. It's just like, whoa, okay, that happened. Let's talk about it. Let's process it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's extremely valuable that it's not even necessarily got to be something that you asked for, but it's something you experienced that still forced you to grow as a person. I think that's awesome. You had an extremely illustrious history in the military and then teaching, and ultimately you decided to go to law school. Why?
First, the practical nature of it. I knew the life I was living, like, and how I wanted to live. I volunteered for things in the military. I was gone all the time. I was gone over half the time, and it just, I didn't see that as a sustainable thing for being part of a community, really knowing my neighbors, and then you know, possibly having a family. And then the second part, I always thought I'd go to law school. Like at University of Montana, I was in a pre-law program. I was very happy in it, and I was impressed with the things they said you could do with the law. And so I wanted to be more involved and hands-on with the community that I lived in, that my kids went to school in. And I thought it was just another way to serve. And I think, like all of us, you go to law school and gosh, you hope you'll like it. You hope after all this effort and getting through law school, you hope you're going to like the job.
So with law school, I mean, did you enjoy law school?
I enjoyed parts of it. I took it very much like a job where, hey, let's put the time in, let's knock these things out. But there were parts I didn't enjoy, but there were some great intellectual opportunities there. Two professors really stand out. One professor was a former dean at CU Law. I went up in Boulder, Harold Brough. And the other guy was a gentleman, Professor Fred Bloom, just brought a lot of energy, a lot of authenticity to the classroom, and would really challenge students. And it was never, you know, the nasty things you hear about law school where they're trying to put you down with a question. Yeah. It was a very much a supportive environment, that the classroom was a very special place. Mm-hmm. And we were also lucky at CU. I had two great adjunct professors. One, Justice Neil Gorsuch, he was my ethics professor.
Oh, yeah.
And he would allow a lot of discussion. I mean, he would allow people to really challenge him and challenge different things in studying ethics. And I respected that so much that he left things wide open and he welcomed those intellectual discussions. And then Judge Timkovich, who's on the 10th Circuit, I took election law from him. And he was the same way. I remember walking in and, you know, this is a pretty darn important judge and extremely friendly, extremely giving of his time. And same with Justice Gorsuch, was always willing to talk after class. Mm-hmm. And it was funny because those two guys mentioned how, hey, they tell the whole the class, you have no idea how much someone's advocating for you. There's a person out there who is knocking on our doors, telling us, telling everybody in town to hire his students because they're special, they work hard, all these things. And not surprisingly, when you hear it's Phil Weiser who did that, it comes as no surprise that he was a huge advocate for his students and for CU.
At what point, I guess, did you decide what you wanted to do as a practicing attorney?
I was confident I wanted to be a district attorney, doing all the research I could and trying to talk to people before I went to law school. And during 1L year, during a job fair, I met Andrew Cooper, who's now at the Attorney General's office. He was the lead appellate attorney in the 18th Judicial District. And I talked to him. I really immediately respected him and how he talked about the profession, talked about what we'd get involved in even as little interns. And I was fortunate enough to get hired by him. And so I started right after 1L year in the appellate section of the 18th and going through, I mean, might sound crazy now, but going through transcripts of trials, mm-hmm. seeing the issues brought up, I was hooked. I was very happy with it and figured that was where I wanted to be and just continued on interning there. And then I was lucky enough to get hired on.
Appellate work is so perfect for interns and young lawyers in general, because just like you said, you issue spot and you read transcripts and you see how a trial actually happens, albeit mm-hmm. on paper. But as an intern, I think that's such a powerful experience.
It was a great experience. I wish I was could tell you I was great at it. I am not. And there was three of us that were the main interns, and we'd always play a game when we turned in a draft. If one sentence survived, that was a point. If it was an entire paragraph survived, that was 10 points. And the point totals were never very, very high, but we did our best. And the product you get back from Andy Cooper is always better than what you gave him. And I would compare him to the best skier on the mountain being, hey, I think I'm a decent skier. I can, you know, make my way on the mountain, no problem. But there's always that one person you see that is skiing faster and better than you. And you're like, you know, I'll never be that good. That's how I feel about his writing, because he is that good. And that was it's a great experience, great example.
That's amazing.
Do you feel that part of, I guess, your experience in line with that analogy is trying to keep up with that fast skier?
Sometimes, yeah, because there's always somebody who's better. And hopefully they want to be a mentor, or at least give you the time to talk about things, because you can see somebody practicing and just recognize they're good, but it's always, you know, how'd they get there? How did they develop this? And there's the person who's actually the ADA in the 18th right now, Tom Burns. I was lucky enough that he was my mentor when I was in county court. And I think there are very few DAs in the state that are better than he is, from beginning to end, and how to review a case, how to be a professional and be courteous, how to think about a case's bigger issues, and then ultimately go to trial. And he was somebody who, the first time I did a trial with him, I bet I stole about five or six things of like, okay, he does that better. I'm changing how I do this. He does that better. I'm changing how I do this, from everything from a direct to simple things of introducing exhibits. He was just so polished and just a real pro. So he's a faster skier than I am.
So you've kind of been in the same vein for your entire career. So let's talk about who you are now. So what is your current position and how did you get to it?
Right now I'm a senior deputy DA in the first, so Jefferson County. I've only been a lawyer just over 5.5 years. So it hasn't been a ton of time. I still love it. I still love getting up early to get after it, to get work done. And I never planned on leaving Arapaho. I was in a great position. There's lots of good work. There's lots of good lawyers. And I was the veteran treatment court rep, which is very important to me.
Yeah.
I never planned on leaving, but I'm a 2019 grad from Cobalt, which I think is often spoke of as the best class ever, but moving on, people like Courtney Holm. And then one of my best friends in the class, other than Courtney, was Alexis King. And obviously she won the election in the first, and we had talked a lot in Cobalt about the philosophy of being a DA, office culture, leadership, better way to find justice for victims, to find appropriate resolutions in cases. And she had all my faith and respect. And she called me, asked if I wanted to join her team. And I said, well, that's very much a chance I'm willing to take. And it's been great. Arapaho is great. And it's been just over 4 months in the first, has been fantastic.
So we joke about this podcast being a commercial for Cobalt, but seriously, Cobalt changed your career.
Colorado Bar Association Leadership Training Program, by the way, for anyone who doesn't know yet, that's what Cobalt is.
It's a phenomenal program, and it brings people together and changes careers and lives.
Well, I think there was that crazy stat after the 2 years after graduation, over half the class had changed jobs and stuff. And I thought, that's not me. I'm exactly where I want to be. Forget it. Well, busted.
So you mentioned being a part of a specialty court, and I know that that's something that you're really passionate about, and frankly, it's interesting. So will you tell us a little bit about your experiences in veteran court?
Of course, yeah. It's part of the problem-solving courts. It falls under that umbrella. I didn't know what it was at first. I just heard about this veteran court. They needed a volunteer. I was like, yeah, let's go. Let's see what I can do to help. And I had no idea how much I'd learn and how much it would mean to me. In short, Veteran Treatment Court, or sometimes called VTC, because it's military, you got to use an acronym. It's a collaborative problem-solving approach where the focus is to reduce recidivism of people who are veterans, but now got involved with the criminal justice system, and they have some kind of behavioral health diagnosis, and oftentimes it relates directly to their service. It happened during their service because of things they saw, things they did, things they experienced. It serves, it's the military population, which is our society's population. So real diverse ethnic, cultural, spiritual, economic backgrounds, educational backgrounds all over the place. And they're the same people I've served with when I look at the clients in Veteran Treatment Court. And they provide, like, what's very, very different is the participants are more accountable. They're in court more often than the average person. They talk to the judge directly every time. It's not they're in the back of the courtroom and there's some paper shuffling and, okay, here's your next date. Their progress is talked about every single time with the judge and with other service providers. Sometimes it's probation, with Veterans Affairs, with different treatment providers. And so everybody is really clued into how this person's doing. And from the staff perspective, there's the judge, there's a public defender, there's program coordinators, there's peer mentors, there's the VA, and then there's the judge. And in Arapaho is Judge Bonnie McLean, who is absolutely perfect for that role. Not only extremely smart, but extremely sincere and caring about veterans and about the mission of VTC, and listened to everybody. Held them accountable, no doubt, but did so in always a respectful and professional manner. It wasn't like punitive on people. It was more with a lot of the veterans. It was like almost like a 10-degree turn back to, hey, don't forget who you are. Here's the help you need to get back to where you need to be. And I want to say recidivism over the long term was down to 13%. And it was just awesome. The programs the vets got involved in, they're not this huge weight around the taxpayer's neck. They are programs that are out there through the state, through the VA. And a way I thought about it is, here's people who helped defend freedom. Now we're trying to get them a little freedom back in their lives by helping them out with treatment and hopefully getting the heck out of the court system. And not that we need to plug Cobalt anymore, but it's so easy. Judge McLean is the one who really encouraged me to go for Cobalt, and she wrote my letter of recommendation. It was just, she was and still is a very important mentor to me. And again, someone who just does things so well, you can't help but learn.
That's amazing. Are there specialty court programs in the first, and are there any that you would like to help build in the future?
There are actually, they're the same. There's recovery court, there's veterans court, and did the whole gamut of problem solving courts. And the office actually it's another one of the focuses that Alexis is looking at. And one of the podcast alumni, Tarek, he's taking that on and working that hard to see how we're doing things and see how we can improve. And the DA who's assigned to that right now is already doing really well. She allowed me to sit in and just kind of observe and learn. And I was impressed already. It was great. So I volunteered to help and try to get more involved. I don't want to leave my felony docket and doing trials and things, but I'll make the time to be in there because it's worthy. And selfishly, it really sustains you. If a lawyer needs a pick me up or a thing to remind them why this profession could be so important and how it can just have a direct impact on somebody's life in a very positive way, go to a problem solving court graduation and hear the stories of the clients, see where they were, where they are now, what they've been through, what their journey's been. Every time you leave one of those things, you're like, all right, this is a good deal to be involved in this. And it's really a privilege to work with problem solving courts.
I couldn't agree more. It's such a tangible way to actually help people turn their lives around, which is amazing.
This all kind of ties back into an interest in service that you had from a fairly young age. So how does that impact your practice as a DA?
The first thing I try to remember, I mean, we all, well, I'm far from perfect, that the mission and what we're doing is more important than anything selfish. There's always something to be put in front of you, and it's not about ego. It's not about what you want. It's okay, what's the right thing to do here? And that's, I think, where it immediately impacts me on a daily basis. But then also in the first, we have leadership that gives us the discretion to do the right thing. And so nobody is over your shoulder. Nobody's second guessing you. It's, you're part of the team. You're here for a reason. Go out and do your best. And that collaborative type of service, those things, that's what I really think about when I think about why I like being a DA, why it's been so important to me, is that the service to others, getting people to have a better life than they currently have, or on the other side of it, protecting people by holding others accountable. And so it just, it's easy to remember. It's not about me, because there's a whole lot of more important things going on than me.
As far as, I don't know, what are your plans to better the world next?
My plans, continue to learn, continue to grow. Things are just done a little different in Jefferson. They weren't Arapaho. And so I'm learning the differences. And then, hey, if I see a difference I don't like, who can I talk to about it? And, you know, I haven't found a whole lot yet, but seeing, you know, continuing to see things from other people's viewpoints, and hopefully continuing to lead or run. So much of it is, if you're going to be a leader, the first thing you got to do is set the example. And so trying to just be good for my teammates, support them, whether it's, and then talking to victims, getting trials done, doing well in my cases. That is my, like, that's what I think about for the future. And I know I'm deeply committed to public service, and I'll stay in public service for the rest of my career. And hopefully as long as Alexis will let me keep working for her, I'll keep doing that. And that's my concern right now. And
so do you want your kids to go into military service?
They are 7 and 6. I don't think they have any concept of it. They know there's a picture of an airplane in my office, and that's about it. And so, you know, when they're older, I'm sure we'll talk about it, but nobody pushed me into it. Nobody in my family was in the military before my brother went to the Air Force Academy. And my parents are just supportive. They never, you know, said you have to do this or you can't do this. And so hopefully I can remain that calm with my kids, because it's not easy.
Well, and also, do your kids want to be lawyers?
Oh, gosh.
You're like, no.
I don't know if I should start discouraging them. No, just kidding. No, it's well, first they got to figure out how to pay for law school. No, who knows? You know, it's, we'll see what becomes their passion and what, how they want to be involved with the world around them. I just hope they do that. And I mean, they're just finishing up second grade or kindergarten, so maybe next year I'll start them on LSAT prep.
And I'm sorry, we also know that you just won an award from the Arapaho Bar Association. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, last year, well, I can't think about the ACBA without thinking of Poria, because who doesn't love Poria? I mean, come on.
Another Cobalt staple.
Yeah, Cobalt alumni, and just a leader in word and deed. Through Judge McLean and through Poria, they encouraged me to get involved with the Arapaho County Bar Association. And again, maybe I'm alone in this, but you jump into something you kind of believe in, but you really don't know what you're doing completely. Mm-hmm. And that was another great experience. Be able to see the policy decisions, why they're being made. And Poria was the president when I joined up, and was just fantastic. Not only his policy decisions and his efforts, but allowing me to ask questions that were probably extremely juvenile for his level of understanding, but it was great. And then last year I got the Young Lawyer of the Year award, which my friends tell me, hey, you're not young. And so I don't know what you want, but I was still grateful.
5 years practice. You're still young.
Well, congratulations. That's a great honor.
Yeah. And I cut us off too soon, but Mallory, did you have some specific like criminal related questions? Okay. Because I'm a family law attorney, so my understanding of the criminal world can be a little bit limited.
I just wanted to talk about problem solving courts because I love those.
Awesome.
Yeah, and it's really it's on. I think DAs to get that word out there because the defense attorneys I've worked with and public defenders I've worked with, once they hear about these programs and we can talk about them, and it's an option for clients, it's an option to help people hopefully get on a track to get out of the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. There has been nothing. There's been no hesitation on it. If it works for their client, it's something their client wants to do and they're qualified for it, hey, let's get them in there. And I think it's on the DA's office to get the word out there a little more, make sure our office knows everything that's going on, and then get the word out to the defense bar and everybody else. And I know the VA and other parts of the court work very hard on doing that. But the lawyer side, I think we can catch up a little better. Mm. But I know the hard work is there and the willingness to do it is there big time.
Yeah. And just spreading the word in the community, I think, too, is important for, you know, bringing credibility and respect to the criminal justice system that, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, you know, depending on the issue, gets a lot of scrutiny, you know, in the community, in the media. And then there are these really amazing success stories that just really aren't told. It's kind of the people in that inner circle that know them. So there's some really powerful success stories, I think, that the community could appreciate.
I completely agree. And so much of it, whether it's through, you know, Colorado Bar Association, like Jessica Brown's Lawyers as Leaders effort this year, and all the things she did and the CBA did to get that out there. It's getting that message out of, hey, here's what we're doing, here's what we are, and then telling the story a little bit to first other lawyers and then the community, because these vets and other people in problem-solving courts are part of the community.
Absolutely.
And our community's better when they're better. And ultimately, if people want to dollars and cents it, it's cheaper to have somebody out living their life after a little bit of treatment than being in the criminal justice system. And then it's just better for everybody. And I'm a huge believer in it and look forward to doing a lot more work with it.
And do you think it's important for communities to have military or veteran specific courts?
In the way I've seen it in Arapahoe County, it was very good to have a veteran specific court. Getting the VA service provider, the Veterans Affairs service providers in there, there are special things that veterans go through in military service that is unique to that that community.
Absolutely.
And sometimes it's a cultural thing where the clients, the veterans, become a support structure of their own to each other during docket. They talk, and there's a great nonprofit called Warrior Now that started in Arapahoe County, supporting veterans during veteran treatment court and then outside veteran treatment court. And it's like they speak the same jargon, they have some of the same experiences, and there's just more support. And the more support we can give people through problem solving courts, it helps them in the long run. And heck, all of us could use more support, whether it's you know, great support in the first with communication and different efforts there. You know, all of us do better when we have other human beings looking out for us.
I'm curious too to hear from you about your relationship with defense attorneys and kind of what that looks like for you, how you maintain a collegial relationship with attorneys on the other side of your cases.
Well, we clearly don't get along.
Honestly, I mean, it's been acrimonious this entire time.
Uh-huh. And especially in criminal dockets, because you're seeing the same attorneys over and over again, right?
Yeah, I think that's very fair. Like, you know, in docket, you're having to, well, I shouldn't say you're having to. The poor PDs are having to deal with me a lot, just a couple of them. Uh-huh. But in Justice Gorsuch always talked about You can disagree without being disagreeable. Mm. And I think about that a lot. I know what they're trying to do. They're working for their client. And there are times I would get to a new docket or get to a new jurisdiction and, oh, I hear this bad thing about this attorney and this person's like this. I try to go in with an open mind. And I tell you, I've gotten along pretty well with almost every public defender I've worked with. The public defenders I work with now, I have a ton of respect for them and how professional they are. And I have, unless I'm, you know, missing out here, they've never lied to me. They've told me, hey, my client will take this. They won't take that. When they provide mitigation, it's sincere, it's authentic, and they're doing it for their client's best interest and trying to find a positive resolution. Yeah, we might disagree on a few things here and there, but the whole community, from their client to everybody, is served a lot more effectively if we're working together and not at each other's throats. And I found by just going in polite with an open mind and not thinking, oh, they're this this type of person because they're a public defender or they're a defense attorney, has served me well. And I've gotten along very well with the public defenders I've worked with and defense attorneys. And I hope that continues because they are very important in this process and have a ton of sway. And they have a very hard job because I don't have a client to control. You know, we have the community to serve. We have victims to protect and keep informed, but they are dealing with an individual who has a lot of consequence potentially coming down. And so it's a hard job and it has to be respected.
Well, and I'm wondering also if you feel any of the onus on yourself. I mean, I think I can understand from the perspective of a defense attorney, and Mallory can certainly correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, when you're dealing with the same attorneys over and over again, obviously it's necessary, I think, for your own mental health and also for your professional practice, not to be a jerk to that person because you have to continue dealing with them. But then as a defense attorney, you also have that issue of making sure that you're maintaining respect with your client because you don't want the client to think that there's something going on, I guess, between the defense attorney and the prosecuting attorney. So do you feel any of that onus on yourself, or do you kind of just treat every case like it's the same?
I always think, okay, I work, you know, I have two big bosses. First, I'm completely accountable to the community. And then I represent my boss. I represent the elected DA, who is not only very important to the community, but very important to me. And so those two things guide how I act. And it's some, you know, every case is different. The charges are different. I'm not going to tell you the pawnbroker case is the same as the attempt murder or something like that. But I just try to remember that this is somebody's life, whether, mm-hmm. you know, and they're dealing with consequences of it. So I just try to treat it all as a professional environment. I don't really get too chummy in the courtroom or things like that. And just always want to talk to somebody and keep just a professional demeanor all the time. And to me, that's also like showing respect to the other side, that I don't assume too much. I don't, you know, think I know more than I do. It's, hey, I'm professional to them and just giving the respect they've earned.
Okay. Well, I think we're just about out of time here. So Adam, thank you so much for giving us your time today. We've really appreciated having the opportunity to talk to you and learn about your dedication to service to your community.
Thank you very much. It was great talking to you. I still feel highly unqualified compared to your other podcast guests, but maybe Cobalt gets me enough in there where I can
compete.
Yep, thank you very much. And thanks for getting these kind of messages out to our greater community. And it's been great. I've been listening to them on runs I've done and walking the dog, and it's been great.
Thank you, Adam. It's been such a pleasure to have you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
This has been Our Voices. For more information on today's guests or to get involved, please check out the CBA podcast page at cobar.org/podcast. That's cobar.org/podcast. this podcast series was created by members of the Colorado and Denver Bar Associations. This podcast is a collaborative effort of the EDI Joint Steering Committee messaging team, including Bonnie Schreiner, Mallory Hasbrook, Mo Watson, Mallory Revel, Linda Moss, Mario Trimble, Nicole Sparaza, Courtney Holm, Amy Lopez, Charles McGarvey, and Heather Folker. Our recording engineer is Rick Pontellion of Lionsbridge Recording. Our co-producers and editors are Courtney Holm and Nicole Sparaza. Communications director is Charles McGarvey. And this podcast is made possible with the support of the Colorado and Denver Bar Associations. On behalf of all of us, thanks for listening to Our Voices.